From deep inside the Death Star, I'm Larry Larson.
And I'm Andrew Richards.
And welcome back to Defrag Tools. So this is, well, the show will air the week of GA.
Yep.
Explain GA for people who might
not know. GA stands for General Availability. We're talking about Windows 8, of course.
Yeah, like, yes, yeah.
About 4 or 6 or maybe 8 weeks ago, Windows was RTM, released to manufacturing. And what manufacturing means is we're giving it to OEMs. OEMs is original equipment manufacturer.
Yeah.
HP, Dell, Lenovo, Acer, Asus, Samsung, and all the other ones I'm forgetting. And so they got given Windows.
So when we say it RTM'd, so people know there's like a process.
Mm.
So they get together. It's kind of like it should be a party
for
the group because they've worked so long and so hard on it.
It's called a shiproom party, yeah.
Yeah, so they all get together and they do this shiproom party where they kind of like, I don't know, they turn a key or whatever the heck goes on, but they actually submit it.
Yeah.
And then that is what ends up being the disk, the ISO that people end up buying in the store.
And that's the one you can get from MSDN and stuff like that, and the one from store, as you said.
And it goes off to OEMs.
Yeah, and so they put it on their hardware, and they've been developing this hardware for years, and you know, they have to set it up and make it so it's all right and add the drivers that they've been writing themselves and for the touchpad and the touchscreen particularly and the new Windows 8 video driver model, for example. And then they finally get it all nice and pretty and they start making it. And then most of these things are made in China. And so for the last 2 months, they've been doing that, making millions and millions of PCs and then shoving them in boxes and shoving them onto a container. And it's been slowly going across the Pacific. For the last, I suppose it takes a week at least.
Yeah.
And then onto a truck and then out to a shop, and it has to get to the shop before general availability day. So that night at midnight, everybody can rush in and buy their new PC. So there's a bit of a lead time between when we are finished and when the world is ready.
Yeah.
And so, it's a big week. And so come this week, you can
You can go to the stores and pick up Windows 8.
You also go to your favorite website and order it from the OEMs.
And start buying machines that have Windows 8 already on it.
And the Windows Store, of course. We've announced that we're opening up a huge number of Windows stores, as in Microsoft stores.
Mm-hmm.
But we're also having these temporary ones as well. I think there's 26 from memory.
Yeah.
And they're called seasonal stores or something. And so you'll be able to go off to your favorite mall and pick up your Windows 8 copy, Windows 8 PC. So,
nice.
Big week.
Awesome. So what are we going to talk about this week?
So we've been talking about collecting dump files for a fair few weeks now. We've had 3 episodes on Proc Dump, and Chad came last week and showed you how you can use Task Manager to do it as well with Inbox Tools. And we kind of continually gloss over the debugger.
Yeah.
All right, and we keep on going, well, in a later episode, we're going to get to it. Well, guess what? We're going to get to it right now.
Yeah.
So, this episode's just going to be kind of like the very first episode where we got that USB thumb drive and got the environment variable set and stuff like that. It's going to be kind of like that where we're going to set up the environment so that the debugger is nice and useful. So, it's step one in a long series of things we're going to have on the debugger, interspersed with other tools every once in a while just to break things up. But the debugger's going to get weeks and weeks of attention. So
very nice. Well, let's get started.
Yeah, so we installed the debugger back in episode 1. And I should need an elevated one. And hold down Control and Shift. When you press Enter, you get an elevated prompt. and we have 2 debuggers. I'll show you an Explorer. We have the X64 one and the X86 one. The folder's called C debuggers because it's kind of like a Microsoft de facto standard to put the debugger that matches the bitness of your PC. This is a 64-bit PC, so it matches that. And then there's a second one. So a couple episodes ago, I talked about how you can do -IA. It has to be in uppercase. It's case sensitive. And that registers file associations with the debugger. And so if we just bring up an application. Actually, I'll use presses Explorer. I like to. And then we're just going to find the command prompt, and we're going to create a dump. In C dumps called command. And now, in here, we have an open, right? So this is fine when the target. So this spew you get at the top, the important one to always look for is this little bit sticking off the side. The debugger is best used when it matches the architecture of the target. Commando.exe was a 64-bit process, so we want to use the 64-bit debugger. But what happens if it was an x86, right? You need to be able to kind of like toggle between the two debuggers. We don't really have a second option in the context menu.
Yeah.
And so what we're going to do, you can't really go across to the other one and do the WinDBG because it's do the same thing because it's just going to toggle between the two.
Mm-hmm.
We need to like have the two merged. And so what I'm going to show you is a little trick on how to do this, and it's a bit of registry theory about how, you can see I've already navigated there, ready for the show. Under classes root, things start because of this key, right? And so in this case, the extension of the file is .dmp, or the one that we tend to touch. And there's two different styles for the registry for this. There's ones which have it directly underneath, and there's these ones which have a name over here. And roughly, this is like a...
What's the difference between the two?
It's just the way they're implemented. This tends to be DLLs inside Explorer, where this is just like, I'm going to jump off to another program.
Yeah.
This is kind of like a shortcut. So this roughly says, in the default key, which is the value of blank, which you can do in a registry key, jump to WinDBG thing. So I'm just going to type WinDBG fast, and that will jump down. And then you get this standard... layout, and I use this technique a lot. I add context menus all the time to my system just to, you know, give that program that parameter that it needs and stuff
yeah.
like that. And so what you have here is .dmp has gone to this. If I went to .hdump, .kdump, all these other ones that registered, they all have the same name in it, so it's like an end-to-one relationship. And then they go to here. The icon that you see on the file, you know, the little dump icon, which is resource -3002 out of this .exe. And then you have this shell thing. So this name here is like the command name. It's not actually the name you see on the screen. The name you see on the screen is actually the one over here, right? And it says open. And so this ampersand on the front means that put the underscore character.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I, where's that directory gone? If I use the little known right-hand key, right hand mouse
yeah,
key.
Yeah.
It also activates shortcuts. You can see how there's now an underscore on the
O. So now you can hit O.
But if you do it with the mouse, you don't get it. And if
yeah.
you try to hold down shift at the same time, you don't get it either.
Yeah.
So what we want to do is change this guy, because this is actually the x64 one, right? And we want to actually make the 6 the key. So we've renamed it. We'll leave the open the same. And here's the command that we're going to do. And if you wanted to load... for example, debugger extensions, which we'll go into, you'd put it as in default ones, you'd add it to the command line here. If you wanted to run a couple of commands always, which we're going to do today, you would put it into here. What we want to do is copy this. And so we're going to make a new key, and this one's going to be called open x86, kind of matches the underscore x86 from before. The default key, which is the name you see on the screen, is going to be x86 instead. And we'll put the ampersand on the 8. We want a key called command. And what I'm going to do is copy this guy because it's very close and change the path. And there you go.
Very
now,
nice.
This level here, just a little warning, you can't put a space in the name. It has to be a solid name. So now we've done that, and I right-click on the file, we now get Open 64 and x86. So how did this one become default? Up at the top in the shell key, the name of the key here, so these names here, whoever you put here will be the default.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and you can add as many as you want. So when you have programs that do like print and edit and open,
yeah,
that's how this is working. There's a key called print, edit, and open, and they've just set the open as the default. So then what you need to do is just grab this guy, export, and then we've got our my folder, and I've already got this kind of saved here already, and then there we are. So when we walk up to any machine and we want our registry to work, there it is. So do minus IA first, and that will make the all the other keys, the hdump and all those, and then this will just do the final tweaking of the of the key.
Nice.
Because I used the same name as before, open, as opposed to like x_x64, we're not going to get a conflict. We'll replace it rather than giving you three options, which with one being redundant.
Yeah.
So we've now got dump files, which is kind of cool. The other thing we need to do, which is kind of already done because we did it a couple episodes ago, is minus I. So minus I is about postmortem debugging. So this is simple as you do it under each. And the debugger is now set as the postmortem debugger. So the postmortem debugger is the guy who does the crashes.
Yeah.
All right. So this, and I'm just going to make sure that everybody understands where these things happen. We went through this before, but just, this is worth repeating. Current machines, the local machine software, Microsoft, Windows, NT, which is where everything good is, AE debug, and now we have those two keys. All right, so there's a problem with this key. It's a little bit old. It was designed back in the Wayback Machine. And I'm going to change this right now to a different command. You won't find, I don't know why this isn't documented, but it isn't. And that minus G, the idea behind the minus G is go, right? So what happens is it crashes, WinDBG attaches to the process, and then go says, try again. And hopefully it will have the exact same error again, and then it will pop up and everything will be in the right context. Some things don't, if you, on some things, a go doesn't actually repeat it and you lose the thing. What you actually need is a way of making the debugger, when it launches, to rehone and point to what actually the issue was in the first place. And there's a thing called JD Info, which stands for JIT Debug Info. This feature was added to Windows and Windows Vista. So normally you would be used to the 2% LDs, which you would have seen Dr. Watson and everything else, and it's always been minus P for process ID and minus E for NT event handle. The third one, minus is this JIT structure, and there's a command in the debugger called JD Info that knows how to rip this pointer apart. It's percentage P. Percentage P is the C++, the C printf formatter for pointers. And so on a 32-bit system, it will be a 32-bit zero-padded string, so like 16 characters. And on a 64-bit, it will be 64-bit wide. So it's got the same effect as minus G, but it actually gives you much better context. So on Vista and higher, that's what you want to do. So you want to go into here, and because we are on 64-bit, we need to repeat that in the 32-bit node. So it looks exactly the same. So when you have a 32-bit program and it reads the registry, it reads this bottom bit. So even if it said, even though it says, I want to open the top one, the operating system redirects it to this WAL 64 node. So that's why 32-bit programs and 64-bit programs can get different registry keys.
Yeah.
So we're just going to repeat this down on the 32-bit version. So the minus IA does that successfully for both. And you can see that it's got x86 on the front. And so we put the same command on the end. And so this will be a 32-bit one. So if I have a program that now crashes, and I think, what do I do with it? I think I have a folder with crashes. Yeah, here. If I crash this guy, this is a 64-bit program. You can see in the title bar, this is the 64-bit version of the debugger. And you can see that this whole lot of spews come up, and I'll get to that in a sec. But the point is the 64-bit one came up. Mm-hmm. And if I crash a 32-bit one, the 32-bit debugger came up.
Very nice.
You must do this, right? You cannot debug a program. So this is live debugging. It just happens to be at the end of life of the process, right?
Yeah.
You must debug a 32-bit program with a 32-bit debugger, and you must debug a 64-bit with a 64-bit. Same thing goes with, even though it's not mandatory, there's lots of things that break down if you don't, you must debug a 64-bit dump file with a 64-bit debugger, and you must debug the x86 with the x86 debugger. Very repetitive. So we've taken these dump files, they were done live, and all that's happened in this case is it's gone into the debugger, popped up a screen and said, all right, over to you. You wanted to just in time debug it. Go just in time debug it.
It's time.
Yeah, but it hasn't captured a dump file though.
Yeah.
Right. And so at this time, we're recording this early. I mean, we're getting a whole lot in the bag at the moment because we want to have this run over Christmas, and we're going to, quite frankly, I want to be on holiday. We just finished writing procdump 5.1. It's in beta internally at the moment. By the time this goes out, 5.1 should just be out in the market. So I'm going to show you a 5.1 feature of procdump. And so it is in channel 9 procdump. You can set it as the just-in-time debugger. So if you go minus I, it says install as much like DBG had. Set it as just-in-time debugger. You have to specify a folder where it goes to because it's going to write a file, so it needs to know where do you want to put it. If you don't, if we didn't have this system, it would be in the same folder as the .exe, and you might not have access to write to program files, right?
Yeah.
So that's why we do it. So what this does is sets those two keys that we just described, and you know how I said we have the three keys for process, event, and JD info?
Mm-hmm.
Well, here they are, three just packed tight on the end of the command line. And so all this has done is set these two folders, and whatever folder procdump was in when you ran it becomes the path to it, and then here's our output. So if we do that now, those crashes, it captures dumps, and then Windows Error Reporting kicks in. I got rid of them really fast. Because of the way the procdump attaches and detaches, Windows Error Reporting will actually try to replay the exception. So sometimes the exception can happen twice.
Yeah.
And that's why this particular example happens to get two dump files. The one I did then was I installed it, but I didn't specify a size, so it defaulted to minis. And so these are really tiny little guys.
And so if you have two of them, do you need to work with one over the other? Or does it matter?
One's the, obviously the original one, and the second one isn't a reattempt to redo the exception and continue on, which just crashed again.
Yeah.
And access violation is an access violation, but some things are continuable after that. And so always go for the first one because it's the closest to the original error,
and then
work your way back. If we wanted different sizes, you would just put MA, and you'll see that there's an MA switch in here. And then the other one is MP for mini plus, which is halfway between them. And the other one is a custom one, minus D, so you can specify your own DLL. And we went through that, how you can code a procdump extension. I'm going to leave this as MA. You have to be logged in as administrator because you have to have rights to write to these keys. Otherwise, it'll go just access denied error message. So I'm going to kill these three dumps and get fools instead and do this again. Good thing about this is in corporate environments, Windows Error Reporting still exists. So it's a way of, on a production system, catching it, but then letting the bigger ecosystem, which corporations have, still report on it, still report it to Microsoft, still report it internally, stuff like that. And so, much like you did with, remember how when I had the dump file before, it spewed up stuff on the screen, and everything was good? Procdump does the same thing for you behind the scenes. And so you can see it up here. It says, this is the command that ran. Here's the three parameters. So it was process ID 4488. It gave me a handle 172. And here's the address of the JD info. Up in the comment, it actually gives you the JD info command in case you want it. It also repeats, it reads this data and repeats it as an exception context record. And what that means is we've thrown an issue. Right, and something completely foreign away has gone, oh, that was bad, and then invoked the code. So there's a huge amount of code between the issue and where we are now. So this is, you know, hundreds of millions of instructions later in the program. So you want to wind back in time to what it looked like in the past. So if we do a K command, so K stands for stack. Well, you know, why doesn't S stand for stack? Well, it doesn't. S stands for search. So K is the last letter. So stack is, K is your major command. So what you can do is you can see here that here's my code that crashed, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then it went into an exception dispatcher, and it went into the unhandled exception filter. So a couple of episodes we talk about layers of protection. So you can have your own like try catch ones, and you can have your own underscore try catch ones, and it gets wider and wider. Then there's the C runtime one, and then finally at the end, there's an onion that exception handler to rule them all.
Yeah.
Which is the one that the loader does, and that's exactly what this is. It's inserted at what's called an unhandled exception filter. It's kind of different to a normal exception filter because it actually works on every thread, where all the other ones, it's based on the call tree, and so this is like a ubiquitous global one. And then you can see that this one falls into the Windows Error Reporting subsystem, and so do Windows Error Reporting, do the internal thing. This is the thing that actually allocated the JD info information. This is the guy who read the AU debug key. This is the guy who opened did an equivalent of a printf of that string that we had in the registry, mm-hmm. turned it into a command line, ran that process, and now it's waiting for multiple objects. It's waiting for either the process to terminate, which means obviously it's finished debugging the target, or it's waiting for that event, that second parameter, the minus E.
Yeah.
It's waiting for the target to fire that event, which means the target might say, cool, I've looked at this, I'm done with this, you can continue on your merry way, but I'm personally going to stay up and keep on running. So it might go, all right, I've gathered my data, I'm now going to spend the next 5 minutes auto-analyzing it offline. So you don't actually have to have the executable terminate for it to end. So that's why it's a multiple objects call, not a single objects call. But the issue's got nothing, we are now, we've captured the state way, way past the point, right? This has done registry reads, it's launched processes, it's changed the memory address space, lots of bad stuff. We actually want to go way back to here. And that's what ECX are, exception context record. So when you make a dump file, or when procdump makes a dump file, it injects a thing called an exception context record as metadata into dump file. It's got an exception record, which is quite frankly just the exception, and it's got a context record. And a context is registers. So the thing that makes...
And what is a register exactly?
So a process has memory, right? But memory is just memory. It doesn't change itself. Right? You need to have threads that do that. A thread is only the state of the CPU, right? And the CPU can actually run without memory, technically. It only exists because of a type of memory called registers. So registers are just straight numbers in the dump inside the core. Mm-hmm. And so every single core has a set of registers. And that group of registers is called the context. And so when you... the R command registers shows you what those are. There is a whole lot of registers to do with straight data, and there's registers to do about where you're up to. And particularly the one that says where we're up to is we are currently executing this piece of memory, right? And this, so I'll skip the R at the front for a second, but IP stands for instruction pointer, mm-hmm. i.e. what piece of assembler are you executing right now? And you can see that this number here is repeated down here, and it's actually on a ret command. So when I jumped into this process, that ret command was being executed in the CPU on one of the threads. And so when you take a dump, every single thread is pulled out. It's a bit weird, isn't it? When you do a dump, it stops every single thread dead in the water. It deschedules them, and then it collectively looks at each one and writes it into the dump file.
Yeah.
And so in this case, it was on a ret command, which is in pure hexadecimal C3 is the binary for it in the code. So this is the code that's running. The next one is the instruction pointer, which is where we're up to in the stack. The stack is, unfortunately, it's just a block of memory, right?
Yeah.
And a lot of people get confused about call stacks and stacks. A call stack is just the viewing of the stack's sequence of events. And what I mean by that is stack is just pure memory. It can have local variables in it, whatever it wants.
Yeah.
Right. It's just a block of memory that is not it's not controlled like the heap is, right? And so a call stack is just the functions that got called. And on the stack, which is pure memory, you've got data, 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 and then, oh, by the way, when you finish this finish this function that you just called into, I want you to come back to this line of assembler. So it's the line after the call,
yeah.
Right? And so this address here is what you will return to, right? So the command that executed this function here, the one above it, is one instruction above this guy, right? And we actually can do that. I'll do a quick... show you what that looks like. We'll unassemble that backwards. Oh, it doesn't like me. you know, the point is it's where you are. So the call stack is the functions that you're going through, and the stack is the memory where it's kept. So this currently points to where we are in the stack. So as you call functions, we go up and up into the stack, and then we return from a function, we come back down. And so this line goes up and down, right? Which is why you can't allocate memories on the stack, in local variables, because you go up, and you store something in local variable, and if you returned that to the guy before you, well, you'll come down, and in most programs, that's good, because you haven't gone back up again. So you can read this memory that inherently is freed, because you've left it.
Yeah.
And then, but the problem is, if you then get this guy and then go give it to this guy over here for later, mm-hmm. and this guy goes, okay, I'm finished, and then goes up again, whoops, and you just wiped it. And then you come back to it, and then this guy tries to read it, and stack corruption has hit you. So that's why you can't return stack variables. So registers, the two that really matter are these two. The instruction pointer is the instruction that you're currently running, and the RSP, which is the stack pointer, is the current position on the stack. So from where you are in the stack and below is the validator. Anything above is history and it's irrelevant. All these guys here, the RA, A, B, C, D, E type ones at the top, are used to pass data. We'll go into that in more detail in another episode. And then in 64-bit, they added all these ones at the bottom. So 32-bit processors have a lot less. So if we do the same thing with a x86 dump, you'll see that there's a lot less registers, and they all start with E, right? And so there's some naming mnemonics out there. So the sequence of events is AL is the bottom 8 bytes, AH is the next 8 bytes above it. So you've got 8 bytes at the bottom, and then 8 bytes above it. It's called the high bit. And then if you wanted to put those two together, it's AX, which now you're up to 16 bits. If you want to go to the next one up above that, it's EAX, so it's 4 bytes. And then it's RAX for 64 bytes. The registers in the CPU are 64 bits. If you say copy a character to a character, it will still use a 64-bit operation, and it will pad the other bits with zeros or Fs, or depending on how the opcode works.
Yeah.
And so it's atomic in that way. Windows is atomic to the bit width of a process. So if I say copy this from X to Y, then you don't actually need to do an intrinsic multi-CPU lock if the copy is within the bit size, so from 64 bits to 64 bit. It's an atomic read and atomic write.
So are all registers equal, or are some more important than others?
Well, the instruction pointer and the ESP, if those guys are not stable, well, obviously, if you do some stack corruption and then fly off to a bad piece of memory as the new EIP,
yeah.
and that isn't code, well, or isn't on a page that's execute, then that's an access violation, you're dead. So a program is dead in the water if the instruction pointer is not valid, right? The stack pointer equally is valid, because unless you know where your state is, you're dead in the water as well,
yeah.
right? The rest of them are all very volatile, and unfortunately it's an experience thing. Registers can't always be trusted, right? And particularly when Chad goes through, he's going to do kernel debugging, equivalent of this in a later episode, in a couple of episodes. The context that you get only is partial, and it's called a trap frame in the kernel, and it's called context in user mode. So, yeah.
And
so,
is there a difference in how you debug user versus kernel?
Oh, huge. One is based on the virtual address space. So user is based on user address space, and you spend a lot of time. You have all of the threads available to you, right?
Yeah.
You have everything's available because we page in all the information and make a dump file that has everything in it. When you do kernel, well, there's no concept of a process anymore. You're not in this segment anymore. So you have to navigate between processes for starters. And then within that, you have to navigate between threads. And then within that, you have to navigate between the kernel side of the thread and the user mode side of the thread. So, you know, much more convoluted. The basic commands, reading registers, RK, they're all the same.
Yeah.
But the bigger concepts really do trip you up. And I did user mode debugging for 3 or 4 years at Microsoft, and then went to kernel, and I felt like I didn't know anything again.
Yeah.
So it is quite a change.
Yeah.
And Chad's been doing this for, you know, hundreds of years, and so that's why he's going to be doing the kernel episode without a doubt. So, yeah, so I'm going to open this again and show what it looks when it's clean, because there's more of the experience that When you open up a dump file, you just double click it. You go, there's an exception stored within it, which is this statement here. As soon as you see one of those guys, just do this command. And what I'm going to show you is the difference. So this is where we are now, which is, you know, in Windows Error Reporting. Mm-hmm. And when I do ECXR, it's going to change and it's going to give me the registers at the time. So the instruction pointer obviously is different because we're in different code, we're on a different stack or different location on stack. So everything's being wound back in time to where we were. And so these registers are valid. And because the instruction pointer is valid, we can look up the source codes. The source code's aligned for you. So if you have private and public symbols, there's public and private symbols. Public symbols don't have source code alignment, don't have local variables. Private symbols, the ones that you compile yourself, do have those, which means that it'll pop up the source code window. And then you can see here, instead of having the opcode of the Windows Error Reporting, we actually have the opcode of what we were doing. And in this case, it was read from EAX, so read a 32-bit version, and put it into the pointer, and put it into the destination pointed to by RAX, which is a 64-bit pointer. So put zero, if I scroll across, put zero, so EAX is this bit of the code, that bit there, put EAX into a pointer at RAX. Well, if you dereference that pointer, dereferencing a null is bad, and that's what crashed, right?
Yeah.
So we'll leave it there. That's about half an hour. We've shown you how you can load up a dump file very quickly by changing the registry and making it home between the two. Next episode, we'll show you how to drill into what happened, and particularly we'll also cover .NET and Silverlight support in the debugger. The debugger by default only supports native code, so we have to add some plugins to the debugger to make that work.
So for people who can't wait for the next episode, they want to dive in, are there some good sites where they can get both examples of debugging and different tips?
There's a whole lot of, there is a lot out there. My team actually runs a site called the NT Debugging Blog. And what this site does is we just go through. It tends to be more kernel than user mode focused, but we go through scenarios and say, we have a pull leak or we have whatever it is, and we explain all the commands you need to use. And this is one of those things that you just need to learn by example. It's not something that you just can't, I mean, the debugger is like PowerShell and CMD and all these things. You just can't go there and go, I want to learn it.
Yeah.
Right? You have to be there for a purpose. Find an issue for yourself. Marcus Inver says this all the time about system internals. The best way of troubleshooting is to troubleshoot your own issues.
Yeah.
Find something that's annoying you. A crash is a great example of that.
Yeah.
Find a web page on this site particularly that goes through something semi-relevant. Look at the commands that they've used. The help in the debugger is fantastic, quite frankly. All you need to do is go to the index. And there's everything that has the exclamation mark on the front is an extension. Ignore that for now. What we want is everything with a dot on the front. Where's the dots? So everything which has a dot on the front, you want to look at. And everything that doesn't have a bang on the front, you want to look at. But we'll go through this slowly, and we'll get you to the point where you can understand it. The NT Debugging Blog does have a series. This is actually how I learned. Before I joined Microsoft, about 4 or 5 years ago, they ran a series on how to learn. And so we'll put those 4 or 5 articles in the notes, and you can follow those. There's also some, remember Microsoft Systems Journal, MSJ magazine?
Mm-hmm.
That's the one before MSDN magazine renamed it.
Yeah.
And I think it merged in with some other thing at the same time. So back in MSJ, there was a, what was the column name? A Bug Slayer. The column name was called Bug Slayer. And he ran a 2-part series on how to understand assembler, right? Because your world is now, you're not in the C world anymore,
yeah.
or native C world. You're not in the C-sharp world, VB world. You're not even in the JScript world anymore. You are now in the assembler world when you're debugging. If you happen to get source code alignment, then, you know, you get to go jump back into that world. But to understand why this command failed, looking at the opcode, looking at the assembler will tell you why it failed.
Yeah.
Right. And so there's an article that goes through every single major opcode that you need to understand. There's actually hundreds of opcodes in you know, Intel and AMD processors, Microsoft only uses about 20 of them.
Yeah.
Yes, there is esoteric programs, you know, DRM and all these other ones that, you know, those tiny programs use it specifically. But in general, there's only about 10 or 20 that you need to learn, and it doesn't take that much. And it's kind of easy, things like add, subtract, multiply, move, which is just a copy of memory to memory,
yeah.
Call into a function, return from a function, and that's about it.
And what if you want to find out more about registers? Good site to find out more about that.
That's a hard question, actually. There is a website. This is going to, you're going to blow your mind. Intel Developer. Intel Developer Manual. So, Intel has this PDF, and it roughly is the specification for the CPU, right? There is multiple volumes. There's two ways of downloading it. This one at the top, they merged volumes 1 to 3C into one PDF. This is the one that you tend to, you just download this guy and it's got everything in it. In here is an explanation of every single opcode and an explanation of how every single opcode can interact with every type of register.
Yeah.
Right? When the anti-debugging blog series I was talking about with the exercises, mm-hmm. they do go through some of the register basics, and we'll go through that as well. When we go through these things, I'm going to show you how, you know, a crash happened and how something got stuck or infinite loop and stuff like that. And we'll look at the assembler when we do it. So we will go through it. But if you want to delve into the absolute rich details, and if you see a crash on a line of code, it's like, you know, we've got this thing. You go, oh, what's a move mean? So what you need to do is you need to look up MOV, and then you actually need to look up 8900, right? Because move instruction has like 50 different forms.
Yeah.
It's, I have a move for a character to a character, a character to a character that's going to be a pointer to a character, you know, blah, blah, blah. And every single one of those is a different number. So 89 is one of the variants of that, but there'll be an 88, an 87, an 86, 85, 84. They're all a slightly different variants on that. And that's what the Intel manual is for. And I look at that manual quite often. Whenever I see an opcode, I go, I just don't get why this thing's crashed.
Yeah.
Right? And it comes down to two things, or three things. You either read from somewhere that was bad, you either wrote from somewhere bad, or the instruction itself is bad.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes the address on the front, you go, this line of code is perfect. It's doing add plus one. It can't fail. But if some other thread has been stupid and removed the execute bit from this piece of memory, well, the instruction itself is invalid,
yeah.
Because it's not allowed to execute. And so it will look like an access violation or something like that. But the truth is that actually the page is no longer executable, and data execution protection, which is Vista and higher,
yeah.
has kicked in and gone, yeah, no, that's like a virus. And it's like, that's bad, and killed you. So.
Nice. All right, so a little light reading for people between shows. That's
This is why we kind of delayed the whole thing, right? Because it's such a heavy topic, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, I mean, we've been 40-odd minutes already. I could just talk for weeks about this.
Yeah.
This course that we're kind of going through, this is a 40-hour training course at Microsoft for the basics. And then there's, you know, the managed 40-hour week. And then there's the advanced 40-hour week. And then there's, so, you know, it takes weeks and weeks and weeks. So I'm trying to cram it down into a usable, what you can do now thing. So if I do kind of babble on.
And difficult. So what's next week?
Next week, we're going to make this, we're going to go K and look at the stack. And if we do this in managed code or a Silverlight program, that's not going to work. So we're going to go how to debug the vast majority of software out there these days, which is not C++ anymore. So.
Awesome. Okay, I can't wait. That's the show for this week. If you want to email us, defragtools@microsoft.com. You can leave comments in the show notes, and we'll see you next week.
Have a good week.